what actually motivates me to invest more and more in this city, whether my businesses or through direct real estate investment or even other type of investments, is the vision of the leadership behind the city. Experience is much more valuable than money. Make sure that you put yourself in a place that enables you to learn. The difference between an agent who sells and makes 5,000 commission and 500,000 commission defines everything.
You basically mentioned that just recently, your recent post about AI and how AI shouldn't be part of your decision making.
I think that using AI within the real estate industry to advise you on where to invest in is wrong.
What would advice we would give to those looking to invest in a city like Dubai? All right, we're here with another podcast. I am Dubai Catch, and I have a special guest with me here. And he's Mr. Firas Al-Musadi. Is that right?
Yeah, correct.
All right, wonderful.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, absolutely. So tell me a little bit about yourself.
All right, so I'm married with four kids, been married for the last 16 years, been in Dubai for the last 18 years. I started as a salesman in the fashion shop in one of the malls in Dubai. I did that for a year and a half. Then, you know, a third of the world's cranes were in Dubai. So wherever you go, you see construction and real estate and you hear of all the stories. So I wanted to be part of the industry. I didn't want to be just an audience. And to take part of that, I started taking interviews. I was accepted in one of the companies, but it was a job that doesn't offer a basic salary. So it was difficult for me. So I took my vacation, 20 or 25 days, and I did some real estate work with one of the companies. I felt I remember the minute I stepped into the shop, I saw people driving fancy cars and none of them had wings, so they were all successful in real estate. I thought they can do it, I can also do it. So I did 25 days, did well, went back, resigned from the fashion shop and joined full-time the real estate industry. A year later or a year and a half later, the real estate global financial crisis hit Dubai. And I was let go, so I decided to start my own business. That was March 2009. And when I founded FAM Properties, fast forward today, FAM Properties is the largest and the most technology advanced company, real estate company ever built in Dubai, I think. And obviously FAM is just the core business, but we've built an entire real estate ecosystem around it.
When the financial crisis happened,
yeah,
did you feel that, like, once you got affected by the financial crisis, was that the moment you started immediately starting that business?
Yeah.
Did you take some time?
I tried to.
Before that.
So basically, when I did 1.5 years in real estate, I advanced quite fast. And it was difficult for me to regress because pretty much everyone was regressing. And I didn't want to take a step back. So I decided to start my own business. Obviously, many people thought that was, even looking at it now, when you tell someone, they think you're crazy, you took a lot of risks back then. But for me, it wasn't really a risk. I think it was a very rational decision, and I was very objective. But what I did differently is that I did not allow the overall sentiment to take over my brain. I remained objective. I factored, obviously, that there are much lesser transactions. Many people don't want to talk about real estate. Many people lost so much money. People lost their jobs. However, when I looked at the skyline of Dubai and looked at all the projects, I thought even if my job was just to evacuate investors, just exit investors from Dubai real estate market, I'll get wealthy in the process.
So while everyone was trying to run away from the real estate market, yeah, you entered into the real estate market.
Honestly, I remember probably, I think those days, I could see people just pulling their suitcases on the road and just taking their, you know, clothes and hangers, you know, on a rail and just wheeling it out on the street, going from one place to another place. I remember cars were left in Dubai airport and people just basically left. Obviously, it was a very difficult period for many people. But again, as I said, if you were doing well before the recession, if you were doing well during good times, and it means you've gained the right experience during good time, you will always be able to weather out any challenges and during down markets. I think I did really well before the recession. which enabled me to navigate throughout the recession.
So during the recession, you told me that you were married, right? During that time.
Yeah, yeah.
How did that affect you while being able to have a family and at the same time start a business?
Well, when I met my wife, obviously we had a lot of synergy, and she knows me and she knows my ambitions, and she knows, you know, that I'm aiming for the stars, and she knows that I'm workaholic.
Was she in the real estate also?
No.
Okay.
So if anything, I would say she's been like an amazing support for me throughout.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So you think that a partner heavily influences whether you will succeed in life?
I think a partner is, you know, a partner is called a partner because naturally, if he's a partner, he should or she should support you, right? Whether intentionally or not intentionally, just the existence of a partner in your life is another force that cares about you, and there's a mutual understanding, and there's a mutual long-term interest. So naturally, when you have a partner of this nature, it is a support for you. But obviously, if you have misalignments in terms of priorities and what needs to be achieved, then it backfires on you, basically. There's a counter effect.
A lot of entrepreneurs that I know, they sometimes struggle with keeping between the balance of work and between the balance of family. Even me, I have that type of struggle. But some people say that when you're in a business, there's no such thing as work-life balance. You're going there trying to drive your ambition to reach the goals that you're trying to reach. Do you believe that there's such thing as the work-life balance when you're starting a business?
I mean, I don't want to get too philosophical here, but it depends how we define balance, right? You can achieve balance through communication. I think the main thing is communication, right?
Communication.
The main thing is communication, because when you want to prioritize one aspect of your life, you're automatically compromising other aspects, whether that's time with family or. And through different phases of your life, priorities obviously change. So maybe when you're married, but you don't have four kids, you can afford not, you know, being full-time at home, for example, right?
Sure.
You can compromise a bit on your family time because you can still manage. It's just you and your wife. But when you have three kids, four kids, or you have kids in general and they're growing up, you need to put time there. So I think it's, you need to plan it, right? You need to factor your priorities through different phases of your life. And you need to communicate that to your partner extremely, extremely well. And you need to understand that also having a partner is just like anything else in life. If you don't invest time and effort, and if you're not intentional about making that relationship work, and if you're not intentional about having it as an objective, you know, in your life, then obviously it will collapse. It's very easy to think that, oh, it's my partner is not supporting me or, but I think you have a responsibility to make it work.
It's true that you said that investing in everything, same as you're investing in your business, you have to invest some certain amount of time, money, effort into that thing to make it flourish, as you
said. And I would say the overarching thing is communication. Is communication and management of expectations. Like getting the buy-in of your partner on, you know, you having to dedicate certain number of hours, you having to compromise on certain things that any partner would love to have with you. But then also showing the partner what's in it for them. Is that, listen, if you allow me to do this for 5 years or 3 years or 2 years, if you allow me to do this, this is what we are going to get for our future.
But you know? Build that confidence. You have that confidence inside you to say that. Much entrepreneurs, they believe that, okay, I don't know when I'll get this, but I hopefully can reach whatever I want to reach. And what happens if they don't? How would that
okay? But that's why you're talking to a partner. You're not talking to a client. right? When you talk to a client will always want a guarantee that if they're paying, they need to get something in returns. But here you're talking to a client, to a partner, and just explaining to the partner and making a commitment that, listen, I'm going to do, give it my all. Like, it is impossible for anyone to do 12 hours, 15 hours, whatever it is, like a day of work, and they're consistent and they don't get results. It is like impossible. But obviously, if you're compromising on your time and the number of hours with your partner to go out and play cards with your friends, that's not prioritizing and that's not communication, and that's
very true. It's very interesting. When I was reading the book, you actually married your wife in 2 weeks.
Yeah,
like you met her for 2 weeks and then you got married, which is very not common these days if you think about it. Most people want to just take it longer as much as they can, and then once they got to know the person, then they start to marry. How did you feel that you were confident that this is the one?
I think in general, I'm very assertive in my life. I hate gray area. Like, I can't handle the gray areas in anything. I'm always assertive. I go to meetings, I'm very assertive. I wake up in the morning, I'm very assertive about what I want to achieve. So, and I like to be settled as well, and settled emotionally as well.
What do you mean by settled emotionally?
Settled, like not a roller coaster. Not on a roller coaster, not one day, because obviously, you know, I mean, I'm emotional by, you know, that's my nature. So I'm not cold, and it's important, that aspect of my life, that box was very important for me to tick in order for me to focus. And when I found, you know, the right person, where we aligned in terms of, you know, values and aspirations and way of living, I just said, that's it. It's either this or nothing. And I remember her mom thought that I'm crazy. But yeah.
They didn't agree with your marriage first?
Yeah, my wife is English.
Okay.
So obviously I had zero money back then. And I was this Syrian guy who just came to Dubai and worked in a fashion shop. And obviously her mom was like, hey, I was just going to get the passport from you. And
Ian. They had that perception of you that you might use the person that
And I don't blame her mom, you know. Any mom would be very, very careful with her daughter. And funny enough, that's why I never actually took the passport. I didn't need to take the passport, and that was not obviously the intention. But when you say in 2 weeks, to also Westerners, they're not used to, okay, you just met me for 2 weeks, now we're going to get married.
I'm surprised.
Right?
Yeah. Me, you mentioned English, usually Arabic.
But my wife is a convert, and okay, she grew up in Dubai. So she knows Dubai more than me, in fact.
Very interesting. Now,
I've never been on a podcast where I spoke about my, you know,
we speak
my wife and my family as much as I did now. But I hope someone can benefit from that.
In your book, you mentioned that you didn't have that natural confidence, but you build it over time. So if someone was trying to build their confidence to really initiate on the go and build that business, what steps they should take?
There are two types of confidence. Some people are naturally, they're just born confident. Wherever you put them, they speak very confident, whether it's camera or stage or news or strangers. And some people are not. And I didn't belong to the naturally born confident people, because I think it's a very good thing, because I only like to talk about something that I'm very, very well seasoned and I'm very well aware of, you know, what I'm about to say. So I don't have the confidence to talk about something that I don't know. So you either back your confidence with real substance.
And how do you do that?
Right? You do your homework. That's it. Now, if you talk to me about real estate, I can talk for hours and hours. Start talking to me or asking about things that I'm not very sure about, then you would see me. You would see that, you know, I'm struggling.
A lot of people might have experience, but they have experience maybe in theory, not practical. For example, you, for us, you have been there, out there.
Yeah.
So you have the experience to back up your confidence. A lot of people might not have that outside experience. And even if they do, they still have that self-esteem that tells them, no, you're not there yet.
Well, just you practice. That's it. So like it's okay. Confidence or anything in life, I say if it's not an objective, you will never achieve it. So it needs to be an objective. Once it becomes an objective for me or for someone to become more confident in a certain topic or in a certain aspect of their lives, then they become next intentional about achieving their objective. When they're intentional, it means they start taking actions, right? They plan. It's like if you are methodical about life, you can probably achieve anything. You just need to say, okay, I want to do this. And in order for me to do this, I need to do 1, 2, 3, 4. And I need 3, 4, 5, 6 resources. If you don't have one of these resources, whether the practical experience or the theoretical experience or whatever it is, then you just work on getting these resources and making them available. Once the resources are available, then you start actioning to get there.
Now, in your book, you also mentioned that you compromised a lot of different aspects of your life to reach where you are right now, which is CEO of FAM Properties, a very known brokerage, real estate brokerage right here in Dubai, with multiple different offices spread out throughout the city of Dubai.
Now I know you're on my social media.
Was it all worth it?
Oh yeah, of course, 100%.
So you feel that all that sacrifice that you had to
go? No regrets whatsoever in my life. The only regret that I have in my life is any time or any mission or any process or situation I went through and I didn't give it my best. Other than this, obviously everything I did is worth it, big time.
I've seen also...
I feel how worthy it is, like throughout my days.
I've seen a wisdom quote that you place in the book as well. And it said that this too shall pass. Yeah. What was that moment for you that you felt like you had your highs? And
oh my goodness. I think I went through maybe 3 or 4 extremely bad situations in my life.
So it wasn't easy for you?
Like extremely bad. Bad as in like almost you're losing everything. So obviously I remember one of my very close friends, Khamis, told me, Firas, this time will pass. And he told me a small story. He said there was a king and the king had a minister or a counselor. And the king said, told him, he said, give me a statement that makes me happy when I'm sad and sad when I'm happy. And his counselor said, this time will pass. So whether it's happy times or not, it will pass, which means happy times will be followed by challenging times at some point, and challenging times will be followed by happy times at some point. And believe it or not, this quote has helped me so much through the darkest moments of my life.
So you remind yourself every time.
This time will pass. This time will pass. Every time I go through a challenge in my life, I say, okay, first of all, I say it's not just me. Everyone is subject to this. Some people have been there. Some people are there now. Some people will be there in the future. Number two, I say, I acknowledge that it is a challenge. And number three, I start thinking, okay, what can I do about it now? And then I start just taking actions because I tell myself, if I don't do anything, nothing will happen. Nothing will change.
Very interesting perspective to hear from you. I've also looked into you now reaching the stage of financial success. Do you think that money and success can bring happiness to the people when they reach that?
I mean, money helps you obviously getting the things and doing the things and living the life that you want to live, that makes you happy, right? Obviously, if you got money, you can do more charity, right? You can buy fancy cars, but also you can help more people. So whether this makes you happy or this makes you happy or both make you happy, without money, you can't do that. So 100%.
So you feel happy.
Money defines what type of mattress you sleep on, what food you eat, what cars you drive, you know, how much you can help others, how much you can help your family. It is a big thing, but it's not the end goal.
So money wasn't the main goal
mean
for you?
To an end. No. I think not just me. I think any entrepreneur, whether money was a direct objective for them or not, if they only factored money and they went after money every single minute or hour of the day, they would not be able to achieve any success.
Why?
Because for me, every successful business generates money. Otherwise, the business is not successful. So money is one of the things that will follow your success in business. You would never see a very successful businessman losing money every day, basically bankrupt, right? When he's bankrupt, he's not successful. If he builds it again, then he becomes successful again. But whenever you build a successful business and you run it successfully, it means the business is making money. Whether you like it or not, whether it's an objective or not, if you build a successful business, money will follow.
Do you think money should not be your main goal when it comes to starting a business? Because when I think of business, I think about financial success. I think about financial stability. I think about financial freedom.
Success and stability is extremely important. But what I'm trying to say here, for example, at the start of your career, experience is far more valuable and important than money. Like, there's no even relevancy to the value of your experience, because your experience defines what happens with you next in life. Literally, your experience defines your job security, right? So yes, you can say money is obviously very, very important, but it's one of the things that will come whether you think about it or not. It's not wrong to think about money, for sure. It's not wrong, obviously, when you build a business, you have to, you know, you have to do your feasibility. You have to look at the numbers. You have to say, okay, this is my cost. This is my revenue. This is my net profit. This is my IRR, whatever it is. But those who think only of the money don't end up winning, for sure. Sometimes you let go of money on the short term to build a relationship that will bring you so much more business and hence so much more money in the future.
So people should pursue knowledge and experience first and then pursue to start something that will build them that successful.
See, what defines how much money you make in life is extremely simple, and it's proven and it's evident, yet not everyone, either not everyone understands it or not everyone pays attention or enough attention to it. What defines how much money you make is your experience, period.
That's it.
If you look at athletes, if you look at boxers, if you look at real estate agents, at engineers, architects, anything in life, any aspect, any industry, the top 1% or those who do it better than everyone else makes the most money, 100%. You give the same exact piece of land to two different architects, to a global architect, very reputable architect, and to a fresh architect. Okay? You will see that it's the same it's the same land, right? So it's the same zoning, it's the same rules and regulations, the same governance, the same scope even. Design a house for me. A global architect or a very well-renowned architect will charge you maybe $1 million. A fresh start maybe will take from you 10,000 dirhams to do it. So look at Ronaldo versus how many football players? How many good football players there are? Many. How many very good? Many. But who's the best? Who can provide the most value to people around you? Those are the people who make most of the money. So the minute you step into an industry, if you want to make more money, and like I said, it's not wrong to think of money and how much money you want to make. I think it's an integral part of planning for any business. But if you want to say, I want to make so much money, you have to say, okay, who's making what in the market? What value are they providing to their clients in order for them to make that much money? Now, when you think of making more money than them or the same money they're making, you're thinking of competing with them towards who can create more value to clients. So the entire business world is actually competing towards clients' experience. I think the business model of Dubai, which is like beyond inspiring, is grounded in clients' experience. Dubai runs like a very, very, very successful and durable business model that stands the test of time, you know, because it focuses solely and more than anything else on client experience.
Service, yes, to the people of Dubai.
That's the client experience, right? For the people of Dubai, for the residents, for the Emiratis, for people who are passing by Dubai.
It's for everyone.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Let's get into the real estate business.
All right.
While I was reading your book, of course, I wanted to learn about real estate. I wanted to learn about how to invest in real estate and how to actually buy a property or rent a property. Some people believe that buying a home is a liability. And I've been reading like books like Rich Dad, Poor Dad, and he says like buying your home is a liability rather than an asset.
As such,
what's your thought on this?
I think buying a home is something that is for some people more even valuable than money, right? That's back to happiness. Like for me, staying in a home that I own gives me like insane level of peace of mind, the same for my wife, the same for my kids. Decorating or, you know, furnishing or building a home for you, cater to your needs, will give you so much peace of mind that you can do a lot more in your business. So I think buying a home is dependent on what makes you happy in life. If the same thing you know, I could spend $10 somewhere and you think that it's a waste of money, but actually for me, it's like, it makes me happy. And looking at where you're spending your money, maybe you're spending it somewhere where it doesn't make me so much happy. So there's a big, massive sentimental value to buying a home or to owning a home. If that sentimental value is actually there for someone or in someone's mind, then for sure it's worthwhile. Now, obviously, most of those who say it's a liability, they're selling something, you know, whether it's Kawasaki or Grand Cardone or for example, instead of buying a house or paying for a mortgage, come and invest with me in my fractional, you know, or real estate crowdfunding. In fact, if you invest there, you will get much lesser income than actually owning your, having your own house. Because if you think about it, if you look at any real estate market and you take like, you look at historical trends, the overall trend is always up. And I think it's a security, it's diversifying your wealth as well. It's something that you're staying in. It like ticks all the boxes, but you have to do it at the right time.
Didn't you have this moment with your family as well when you talked about whether you should buy a home?
It took me very long to realize this. I actually learned this, right? So I remember we bought a land. I wanted to build a villa. I met one of my friends in Europe and he said, listen, I'm investing here. It's just something really good, gives you great rental income. Why don't we do it? So I went back home. I said, listen, instead of putting our money to build our house, let's invest the money. And with the rental income, we can rent even a nicer house, a bigger house than the one we're building. And we'll still have additional money with us. I can't remember. She almost cried, I think. She said, like, I want a home for us to, that will keep our memories, a home that we would look back at after 20 years. And that moment was like a wake-up call for me. It was like, hold on, like, there's so much more to life, long as you can afford it, right?
So much more worth than just financial incentives.
Yeah.
Sure. You also suggested when it comes to real estate strategy, if you were going to buy a property, you might as well do inspections on them before you buy them. I myself, when I bought my property, I haven't done that.
Honestly. You're an engineer.
Yeah, I'm an engineer, but I haven't done that. But I did my self-inspection in a way. But would you recommend the normal person who's not experienced, Even I'm not. I will not consider
engineered snag and inspection is a must.
A must. Even if you're paying a high cost money in the beginning.
It's not. If you think about how much you're paying to protect your investment, if you're buying a property for 2 million dirhams and you're spending 3,000, 4,000 dirhams to have an engineered inspection, like, it's nothing.
So it's the cost, the little fee that you pay to save the huge amount of fee that you'll pay later.
100%. Yeah. It protects your investment. In all mature markets, it's a no-brainer. Like, banks won't finance if you don't give them an engineering snag and inspection report.
Really?
Yeah.
Interesting. Because I did it through a mortgage as well. I don't know if they did the inspection.
I'm just saying, in mature markets, you know, they won't do the finance for you unless you have an engineered snag and inspection report.
You also talked about the knowledge partner. Having a knowledge partner with you before you invest in a real estate.
Yeah.
How do you choose that?
Well, I mean, I explained that extremely well in my book. I've invested in different places in the world. I've invested in Europe, Turkey, invested a lot in London.
Let's say instead of choose, how do you find one? That's to make a better question.
Yeah, I'll tell you, it took me 3 years back and forth to London to identify the right knowledge partner. That was the first step. My first step was not trying to find a deal. My first step was to identify a knowledge partner. Why? Because it is impossible for me to be able to learn about the market the way someone is actually living there and doing real estate 7 days a week. So for me, if I manage to identify a knowledge partner who has the know-how, the proven track record, and the value system, that's all I need. And I think this does not need real estate experience. It needs just life experience. If you sit with three or four people, you ask questions and you get answers, and you hear how they introduce themselves and, you'll be able to know what kind of approach they have towards business and towards life. And you'll be able to identify who is more genuine than the other to a certain degree, just with your life experience, without being a real estate expert. You compare, right? 4 or 5 people, and the more people you see, the more you learn. And then once you have the right knowledge partner, you build a long-term relationship with them and you move forward. I mean, a real estate agent, I remember, I mean, it's. I also wear the hat of an investor myself. So I invest my own money. I invest on behalf of my investors. And I think a real estate agent plays a very, very important role in, you know, in the, they can make or break your investment dependent on their advice and how you perceive their advice. But I know if someone is in the market for 7 days a week and they specialize in certain project, they will get off-market deals that are amazing, that are, you won't see on real estate portals. And when they get that deal that could make you a million dirham profit if you buy and if you invest in, they will only call people who they trust. That obviously I would call an investor who's got the money I know, got the appetite, and who's not going to circumvent me.
But that takes time to build.
Yeah, because there's a big misconception. Am I going to pay you a commission just because you know the seller? No. It took me 10 or 15 years of my life to build that relationship with the seller and to build the experience that enables me to identify what's a good deal from a bad deal. I always tell real estate agents, you grow in this industry to a point where literally you pick and choose which client to work with.
Any clients coming to you.
Yeah. But instead of you trying to go and just so hungry to get more clients.
Do you think that's a common mistake that most real estate agents do these days? They pursue the clients rather than the clients pursuing them?
No, I think as a real estate agent, you need to prospect, right? You're in sales, so you need to go and to look for clients for sure. But if you do so well over years, and I mean, I can't remember, I think it's been maybe 15 years that I've never advertised anything for me online, like me putting a property ad and say, call Firas so I can go and do the viewing for you and sell you the house or rent you the house. So all the business that I do on a yearly basis is purely referrals. It's people who hear about me from others and they want to do business with me. Now, obviously, I don't have the time to cater for everyone, but then I depend on my team and kind of manage the process to make sure that they're getting the same level of service. But when you do it well over a number of years, then you'll be able to pick and choose which client you work with because you've got so much experience and only 24 hours, right? So you have to know where to invest your time, which client you're going to invest your time with.
But you started originally pursuing those clients.
Oh, 100%. Yeah.
That was your initial beginning.
Sales, you have to. It's maybe how you go and prospect and how you deal with clients is important. If you're doing it right, then it's part of your daily job.
To finish with this specific topic, what would be considered as a perfect exit if you were trying to sell a property? How do you know exactly when you should sell it? Because they say, okay, we have to wait for the high point when it's appreciated really well, and then you sell it. But how do you know?
I think you need to factor, that's the biggest mistake I would say investors make, is they don't factor their exit. That's why I called my book, The Art of Real Estate Investment, Entry to Exit. Because people don't think pragmatically and objectively and practically about the exit. Is I'm buying now and okay, when you think about the exit, it's not only I'm going to sell after 1 year. No, I'm buying this property, which I intend to sell in 1 year. No, I'm buying a property which in 1 year will be in this shape or in this situation, which will appeal to this target audience. And this target audience will be willing to pay X amount of money because of 1, 2, 3. So when you factor your exit, you're factoring who's going to buy it from you, why they're going to buy it from you, why they're going to pay X to buy it from you in the light of the rest of the supply in the market. So when you factor your exit, you have to factor it from day one. Now, if the market goes up faster or the market dips or, is a different story. So if you manage to get an earlier exit that is profitable, then great. But you need to factor your exit from the beginning. Even the risk, you need to also equally factor your risk. Okay, where is my worst case scenario? I'd never advise someone to buy an off-plan property without having the next payment or without making sure that your cash flow will allow you to make all the payments all the way to hand over.
How far they should have cash for the when it comes to off-plan, for example?
They need to have the full thing.
So the full year.
They don't necessarily need to have it in their pocket, but they know that, okay, out of my salary or prior to hand over the last 50% or 40%, whatever it is, I can mortgage and get that money. But of course, no one should buy a property unless they're certain 100% that the future payments can be covered by X, Y, and Z.
Got it.
Yeah, so you probably have different stream of incomes that are planned for the future. So you buy this and then you get from this hand and you invest.
So you shouldn't take too much of a big risk on yourself when it comes to, like, let's say your salary is 40,000 dirhams and the handover payment plan, you have to pay 30,000 every time or something. In
future. I think we invest to prosper, not to bring pressure and nightmares to our life or unhealthy pressure. You can buy a property when you don't have the full money, but provided you know where to get the money to complete payments, okay? You should not buy a property if you think that in 3 months or in 6 months, I will sell it. It's very easy to sell it, and someone will come and buy it from me and will give me profit, or worst case scenario, I sell it without profit and someone will come and buy it from me because you don't have future payments. Because if that someone doesn't come, you lose everything you invested. You're investing in real estate. And I think what makes real estate a very special asset class to invest in is that it's extremely safe. Today, if you want to invest in the stock market, it is impossible for you to be really well acquainted and to really understand what you're investing in.
You can't control it.
There's just too many moving parts to understand it. Even with real estate, you probably can't control it, but at least you can understand it. And then when things go up or down, you can predict to a certain degree and you can factor your worst case scenario. But with the stock market, for example, or other derivatives that you know, you invest in, it's very difficult. Even if the expert explains it to you, it's difficult to understand. With real estate, it's safe because if you ask, you can understand. Everyone lives in a house, either own it or rent it, but everyone, you know, has enough information to understand the basics of real estate. So don't turn that safe investment into a gambling or into a very risky investment.
I think that's a sound advice for most people listening to this. Now, as I was reading your book, the first few pages that I opened, I've seen a small message that you said your biggest inspiration, Sheikh Mohammed bin Rashid Al Maktoum.
Oh, 100%.
Why is that?
This is not just for me to put it in the book. Because of everything you see in Dubai. It's like, you don't even need someone to explain it to you. And for me, I mean, the real estate is a cornerstone in Dubai's economy. And seeing the times where almost everyone gave up on Dubai and thought it's over, whether it's during COVID or during 2009 or during, you know, the start of 2015, the way Dubai has bounced back much stronger, and you know how they navigated and how they don't actually just, when Dubai faces a challenge, Dubai doesn't just try to fix the challenge or the problem. In the process of fixing or confronting that challenge, they make sure that they turn it into an opportunity. So when you see in COVID, for example, it wasn't just for us to control COVID. No, it was to control COVID, and at the back of this, to show the world that we operate with a very high level of agility, and we have, you know, the resources and the mindset to, you know, to stand the test of time.
We're always ready.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And, you know, the vision of Dubai is like, I think if you talk to someone 50 years ago and you say, we're going to have so many towers and villas inside the sea, and be like, what are you talking about? So, and I think Dubai has more than enough proven track record already for someone to understand that they're taking zero risk when it comes to investing in Dubai. Just to be clear, they're not investing in a vision that might manifest or not. It's already there.
Very true. You, as a leader in FAM Properties, you basically mentioned that just recently in your recent post about AI and how AI shouldn't be part of your decision making. But what do you think of the AI as a role in technology when it comes to real estate and your own company? Do you think you will use AI?
Well, I think we do use AI. What is AI? AI is basically a tool that analyzes data, analyzes millions of data points, and then comes back to you and says, okay, we've run all the possible scenarios, and this is the best scenario based on whatever you're inquiring, right? And I think that using AI within the real estate industry to advise you on where to invest in is wrong, and it doesn't work, I think, because we don't have enough data. We don't have enough historical data. We don't have enough well-categorized and segmented data for AI to come and say, this off-plan project will make this much profit. This is just a slogan, a marketing spiel just to attract leads. But using AI within your CRM, within your operations as a company, is extremely important. I mean, if you put ChatGPT account and you give ChatGPT account to your employees, that's using AI within your operations. So I think using AI today is no longer smart. It's basic. I think not using AI is, excuse my language, but it's almost stupid. It is stupid, actually, in a way.
It's kind of like having a calculator.
Like you can't compete. Today it's accessible by everyone. You cannot compete in this market with people who are using AI and you're still using analog processes.
True. We're doing in the manual process.
Yeah.
Now everything can be automated with AI, basically understanding from customer service perspective, all the way to managing those tasks that you don't really want to do.
Yeah, exactly. Our industry is still very much human relevant. I think I can't see any clue how AI can take over the role of real estate agents. at least today. I know that this will happen at some point in the future. Is it my time or not? I don't know. But one thing about AI, that when something comes on, it like hijacks the show overnight. It gives you no warnings.
It's like a sudden disruptive.
Yeah. So now I'm telling you that, listen, we're still extremely human relevant industry, and the role of the broker is beyond critical. And I don't see how AI will take over the role of the broker, but I know that one day it will. And when that happens, it might happen just overnight. It's just one invention.
Can make that happen and make it into a reality.
But I would say the infrastructure is not ready today for that, especially in Dubai.
It's not mature enough.
No.
Now, before moving to the next subject, as a leader in your company, how many employees do you have?
Probably 1,200.
1,200, mush. That's beyond comprehension, especially when it comes to real estate brokerage. Being as a leader in such a company with such volume of employees, what made you successful enough to reach that level?
I think I'm obsessed with progress, and I always, my happiness is linked to progress. So if I don't, like, even if I take like a section of my day, if I take 3 hours of my day, whether it's over the weekend or in a weekday, work on a working day, if I'm not producing value, I immediately feel something is wrong with me. And producing value means, I don't know, spending quality time with my kids is producing value. Wasting time is just not doing anything, not producing any value. Probably scrolling on my social media without an assertive purpose, what I am doing and what's the end goal of just scrolling on my social media. So happiness, my happiness at least, is dependent on creating value out of my time. And I think the head start that we've had post-COVID, because during COVID, I could not stay still. Like, I couldn't stop working. In fact, probably I worked harder during COVID. And, you know, our entire vision of scale took place during COVID. Like, during the lockdown, we were on Zoom meetings with all my leaders and the top management. I'm saying, okay, we're 300 people. We want to go to 2,000 people. And at that time, literally, businesses were closing down. But I felt it was the best moment for me to start really planning, strategizing. And I knew that COVID will either become the new norm and we'll operate with COVID being everywhere every day, or will kill us all. And then that's it. I still didn't lose much. Or it will end. I will return to our normal life. In all cases, I should make something out of my time.
So no matter what were the consequences or what was happening outside world, you were still pursuing what you wanted to do.
Yeah. Like, the key is, again, creating value with your time. You're given 24 hours. You need to create value in this 24 hours.
But a lot of people...
And that drives my happiness.
Entrepreneurs, as I know, instead of like... When they scale, they try to scale in the way that they don't need too many employees and everything. What made you decide, like, I want to go to 2,000 rather than saying, I want to automate everything? I want to make sure that I need the least amount of people to work with instead.
I think it's because we're a real estate ecosystem. So it's not just the brokerage side of the business. So we're into real estate brokerage. We're into a real estate development. We're into real estate development management, interior design, engineered snag and inspection. We have 11 different companies.
Oh, wow.
So it's the nature of the businesses that we have and we run. When you want to scale those type of businesses, you naturally need more people.
Because when you're scaling in terms of different sections or different industries, you feel like you want to maintain the quality or the standard of it. How do you ensure you as a leader...
Big challenges.
Yeah, ensure that the quality is maintained, because it's your brand image, Fab Properties.
Yeah. Well, to maintain quality, you need to set very clear KPIs, and you need to have a very solid governance and, you know, indicators to your performance. So with tech, you can do that. That's why it is impossible today to scale without tech. To scale a business, you need to think of the processes that you have, write the best practice when it comes to these processes, the most effective, efficient processes, and then to ensure compliance and to ensure compliance with standards and that quality won't get diluted, you need to automate those promises, digitalize those processes. And once it's digitalized, that's it. It's it. You go to 7-Eleven, for example, as a supermarket or a grocery store. If I give you now a grocery store and I tell you, create it and run it, you can do the best of the best. You can do something amazing. But you can't keep the quality if you have 200 shops.
Sure.
But if you have a system, you have a governance, and it's digitalized, then you can. Then that quality can be achieved.
Is this system that you create by yourself or with the advisors and leadership that you have, management?
I think I didn't do any of what I have today by myself. Right. So I think I have, for example, my brother is the tech guru. Fatih is like 100% credit for everything related to tech that we have in the company. I know how to monetize tech and resources, but I'm not a tech person myself. But we're the most technology advanced company, like by far in the region. I mean, we're number one and number two is maybe number 100. Not because we're the smartest, but because we've invested so much time, money, and effort in the last 5 years, and no one else did from our competitors. And that's all led by my brother. I mean, we've done this to the extent that we're the only company that the government of Dubai Land Department has signed up with to create DXP Interact, which has literally, I don't want to say just disrupted, it has really changed the way the real estate business is conducted in Dubai by every single stakeholder within the marketplace. And to get there and to have achieved this means you have real tech. It's not just like a marketing spiel. We're tech. We're trying to automate and digitalize. And
we're just doing it for the sake of a show.
Yeah.
Now, just going into the last three questions I might have for you. As Dubai continues to attract from tourists to investors, what would advice we would give to those looking to invest in a city like Dubai?
Read my book.
Read your book.
I genuinely put.
I can show everything. The book a little.
Yeah. I genuinely put a lot of what I know inside this book. And now, when I ask real estate agents, I say, like, we wanted to collect testimonials from real estate agents. And we started asking, what do you think of the book? Did you read the book? And most of them said, oh, I read 40 pages, I read 100 pages, I read 80% of it. And the reason behind that is that when you read, there is so much substance, there's so much details that in order for you to take that to action, it will take you maybe years, right? So I've really written more than enough for a real estate broker to learn, for a real estate investor to learn, and for someone even who wants to start a real estate training company or a real estate training institute or real estate brokerage company to learn from my book.
And I think it's a very evergreen book. So there's some sound advice that I've read that's long lasting.
Yeah.
So it can be applied in anywhere and pretty much can it be applied for a long time. 100%. That's what I've seen for sure. Yeah. Now, going into also about the Dubai real estate market in itself, where do you see it in the future being in terms of a global standard? Is it going to be competing with New York? Is it already competing with New York in terms of people rather than starting to buy or invest in New York City, they're investing more in Dubai?
I think Dubai has cemented its global positioning already. And I think it's definitely among the listed cities for any global or international investor. And I think that will only get stronger as we move forward. And why? Because it's very evident that the government is not stopping. You know, recession, booming time, whatever it is, whatever the entire world is going through is one thing. And the level of determination of driving Dubai and thriving towards, you know, better places. I mean, as a real estate investor, as an entrepreneur, as a business owner, as a resident, what actually motivates me to invest more and more in this city, whether my businesses or through direct real estate investment or even other type of investments, is the vision of the leadership behind the city, is where the city is today and what I know about where the city will be in the future.
For sure. there's a huge trust that we have on the leaders, where they shape the vision that we have for the city.
It's yeah. I mean, it's inspiring. I get goosebumps. So when I said that I dedicated my book to His Highness Sheikh Mohammed Rashid, I really meant it. Like, when I wanted to dedicate the book, I mean, the leaders, whether, I mean, obviously, the leader will never do it solely alone. It's always with the team, right? But the leader defines who's going to work with me. The leader chooses the team. So, and Dubai is like land of opportunities. Has opened doors for so many people. And, you know, to do things maybe they never dreamt of doing back in their countries. And, for me, like, the credit is 100% to His Highness Sheikh Mohammed. So,
yeah. That's a wonderful message. Now, if you could give one advice, final advice in this podcast, to someone who's going to start as a real estate agent, I myself included.
Okay.
What would that advice you would give?
At the start, experience is much more valuable than money. I think like any other business. Make sure that you position yourself with a company, and also you're the architect of your own space as well, who you're surrounding yourself with. Make sure that you put yourself in a place that enables you to learn. The difference between an agent who sells and makes $5,000 commission and $500,000 commission and $5 million commission is purely their experience, because their experience defines their network, defines the client experience that they, you know, they basically use to compete and to acquire more market share. It defines everything. So value experience more. I say, for example, start with rent, not with sales, because rent, the money you make out of the rent, the commission is very small, but the experience you get is like the best possible infrastructure for you to start making sales.
Sure. I think that's a wonderful start. Yeah. Gain the experience.
You got to think about that, what you're competing towards. You're competing towards providing value to clients. And remember, it's a big thing. Like, even if someone knows you extremely well for the last 20 years, right? If someone else is able to give them better service or better deals in the market, then for sure they will not buy from you. They will not put their 10 million dirhams with you.
For sure.
Right? They will still love you and go out with you and everything, but say, you know what? Until you're able to bring the deals and the opportunities this guy is bringing, we cannot deal with you.
Well, so now, thank you so much, Ross, for actually being here. And I want to say to the audience, definitely, they should definitely read the book. I've read it in one day. I finished it, the whole thing. Wow. So it's I'm very consistent.
It's in Russian, by the way.
Do you have it in Russian, Arabic, and English,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So I think they can definitely read that and learn about how to really invest in real estate in Dubai, for sure. I really am humbled and as well appreciate your time and just being here in this podcast.
Likewise, Abdullah.
Maybe in the future we'll do one more again. Sure. Thank you.